If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need BILL. BILL Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With BILL, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using BILL to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how BILL can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to BILL Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
We're going to get into the case, but first, I want to thank Aura for sponsoring this video. You know, it's crazy how much of our personal information is out there for anyone to find. Just the other day, I was talking to a relative of mine who tends to overshare on social media, and I'm sure we all know someone. Because of my work, I expressed my concerns and decided to do a little activity with him to show just how easy it is for someone to find out everything about you, even with the tiniest bit of information. Get this, all I had was his first name and the state he lives in. That's it. No city, no last name, just his first name and his state. And you won't believe what I found. With just those two pieces of information, I was able to pull up all sorts of personal details about him. His full name, his address, his phone number, and even his relatives' names. And the scary part? All of this information was completely public. It really hit home for me just how dangerous this can be. I mean, think about it. If I could find all of that with just a first name and a state, imagine what a scammer or a predator could do with that kind of information. They could easily access your accounts, steal your identity, or even worse, put you and your loved ones in physical danger. That's why online safety is so important to me, not just for kids and teens, but for adults too. And that's where Aura, the sponsor of today's video, comes in. Aura is an all-in-one online security solution that helps protect you and your family from online threats. With Aura, you can get features like Data Broker Opt-Out, which helps remove your personal information from those sketchy websites that sell it to anyone who's willing to pay. You also get dark web monitoring, so you'll know if any of your information ends up on the dark web, and fraud monitoring to help catch any suspicious activity on your account. But that's not all. Aura also includes identity theft insurance, a VPN to keep your online activity private, a password manager to help you create and store strong passwords, and even parental controls to help keep your kids safe online. The best part? You can try Aura risk-free with their 14-day trial. Just go to aura.com/themissingfound to get started. The link is also in the description in the show notes below. Now back to our case. We don't know the day nor the hour, but when you think about someone going missing, we don't know the how, when, where, and the result of what became of that person. When a person goes missing, oftentimes, they're just going about their day. It's like a never-ending experience until something surfaces. With unsolved missing person cases, there's no end. With that, we have to wonder, hope, and be aggressive. You will soon see how one day can just change everything. A young woman just going about her day, only to never be seen or heard from again. On the cold evening of Monday, December 30th, 2019, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, just less than 48 hours into the new year of 2020, the monumental year that has caused total transformation, 22-year-old Toni Turner went missing in Pittsburgh on what seemed to be just an ordinary day during her from work to home trek. Everyone saw her. They knew her. She was even in contact with family within hours to minutes of her going missing. Then something happened and things went dark. Until later that evening, when her family was notified of an interesting and nearly groundbreaking discovery in the most odd location that could have led to some answers or just another element to throw things off. And we've seen that before. Initially, this was not a cause for concern, but later, you will find that there may have been something there. Toni was a bright soul, but she had her share of experiences like all of us. In the days leading up to her disappearance, she expressed some concerns of her future with her sister in a journal entry that makes you question her state of mind, a neighbor sighting, and a life transition. This case makes you wonder if Toni was targeted, if she wanted to go missing and start anew. You know, like every Black missing person. And I say that with satire. Or if someone staged a scene to make it look like something that it was not. So what happened to Toni Turner on the evening of Monday, December 30th, 2019? Could this be a case of trafficking regarding the tip that led them to the Hill District, a crime of opportunity? Or did she just walk away? We're going to analyze the case details for this nearly 5-year cold case that hasn't received far enough coverage as it should have. Retrace the last known steps of Toni and the assumed timeline that has been shared publicly. Break down the case details. And close with my opinion. You will find that in this case, I will ask more questions than we have answers to. This is the Missing Found Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Harlow. Before we get into the case, I have a few details to share about the show. The Missing Found is an investigative true crime podcast focusing mainly on unsolved missing person cases in the Black community. The cases that I cover have either gone cold, have little to no media coverage, or have gone without conclusion. You can follow the show on Instagram at The Missing Found or on Medium at The Missing Found to read our original script. I also would like to mention that we have a case suggestion form in the show notes or description box that you can complete to submit your case suggestions that are of the Black and missing. We have a Patreon that's now available for you to become a member in our private community to discuss cases deeper beyond our case analyses through private discussions with me, ad-free episodes, early releases, and much more that's exclusive for members only. The show is now available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. For Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating to help the show reach a broader audience to help find our missing. To access all things of The Missing Found, you can visit our website, themissingfound.com. I ask that you please like, share, comment your thoughts on this case, and subscribe if you found value and want to continue the journey with me to finding our missing and learning about their stories. This is case episode 23, The Disappearance of Toni Turner. So who is Toni? Toni Marie Turner was born on Tuesday, June 10, 1997 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She is the youngest sibling out of 3 girls. She has 2 older sisters, with one being Sydney, who is just a year older than her. The Turner family lived in the Braddock area for some time, then relocated to Turtle Creek and spent most of their childhood in this area. Now, there aren't many specifics on Toni's upbringing, but her older sister, Sydney, recalled on the Making the Case with Yodit show, hosted by Yodit Tawalde, how much of a creative she was. Sydney recounted when Toni was a young child up until age 16. She would always draw and paint on the walls in their family home. This just illustrates how art played a major part in her young life into adulthood. Toni was well known around Pittsburgh. She was a dancer, a frequent concert goer, an artist, and just a girl with a soft heart of gold. Everyone she came in contact with took to her light, and with that, she made friends with the very people in her community, easily. Toni was into self-instructed education. She focused her attention on the arts, health and nutrition, and Black history. For work, Toni was employed as a metal fabricator at Studebaker Metals in Braddock, in the Pittsburgh area. She was also a ceramics teacher at Braddock Carnegie Library's Bathhouse Ceramic Studio. Toni wanted to make everyone feel good. She possessed a pure spirit and presented a joy-filled persona. She dedicated her heart and soul to her artistry, and she supported her community with all she had to offer, until things went quiet. The case details. Here, then, gone the next. On Saturday, December 28, 2019, Toni spoke with her older sister, Sydney, by phone or text. They spoke briefly. Toni was scheduled to move in with Sydney and her friends in Braddock 4 days later, on Wednesday, January 1st, 2020. This move came about because Toni was experiencing some sadness and going through a breakup with her boyfriend. Regarding the breakup, Sydney claimed that Toni and her boyfriend wanted to be together, but they could not have that proximity. Because of that, Sydney suggested that Toni move in with her. On Monday, December 30th, 2019, Toni went to work as usual to start her 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. shift at Studebaker Metals in Braddock, which was around a 20-minute drive from her home. Now, in Toni's case, she would have caught the bus, so this may have extended her ride time. She made it to work on time, completed her shift, and got on her usual bus to head towards home. While on her trek home, she went to Dober Tea. Dober Tea is a bohemian-style tea room located at 1937 Murray Avenue in the Squirrel Hill South neighborhood of Pittsburgh. The stop at the tea room was on her way home because her normal travels home included her boarding the bus in Braddock, riding the bus from Braddock to Squirrel Hill, then from Squirrel Hill to Hazelwood so she can walk home. According to employees at Dober Tea, Toni was only in the shop for a short period of time before leaving. They recall not seeing anything out of the ordinary. At this visit to Dober Tea, it is not clear if she ordered something, what she ordered, or if she did not order anything at all and only stopped in for a moment. We also don't know the exact length of time she was there. Employees did not notice anything out of the ordinary with Toni. We can assume that she was not under any duress nor any sign of danger brought to her attention at this time. It is mentioned on the Making the Case with Yodit show, Sydney recounted that they were texting while Toni was at a local tea room. It is believed that the tea room that Toni was present at was Dober Tea, since we do have knowledge of her being there, and eyes were on her, meaning it is believed that the sighting is confirmed to have been Toni. After her stop at Dober Tea, she left and started the second and final leg of her trip to make her way home to Hazelwood on the bus. Everything was seemingly okay. In order to reach home, she had to go through Homestead, which is a close to 10-minute drive to her home in Hazelwood. This would mean she may have had to travel across the Homestead Great Bridge. Upon arriving to Hazelwood, Toni exited the bus at her normal stop, which was the intersection at Hazelwood Avenue and Gidding Street. She was said to have been seen walking in the direction of her home in the OWL, which stands for One World Love Hollow Community, which would have been around an estimated 4-minute walk. The bus driver, who was also a neighbor to Toni, and who was on that route that evening, did confirm it was Toni that was on the bus and that exited. It appears that Toni may have actually made it home, and I will explain why shortly. This is the last confirmed sighting of Toni Turner at around 6:15 p.m. Somewhere within an approximate 2-hour time span, Toni disappeared. From this point on, the series of events are faulty. The discovery. Hours later, on the same evening of Monday, December 30th, between 7:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., there was a discovery, an odd discovery that would prove itself to be an unexplained mystery, even still today. Toni's personal belongings were found in a walkway of the Homestead Grays Bridge in Homestead, which is, again, only a 10-minute drive and a little over an hour-long walk from her home in Hazelwood. The belongings that were found were her purse, and in that purse, there was a diary, phone, water bottle, and her keys. Next to the bag, there was a ceramic vase and shoes. This discovery was made by a firefighter who just so happened to have been riding his bike along the bridge and came across the items. I will analyze this element further because I do believe this is an interesting mention and it should be looked into more. The firefighter gave the belongings to his father while they both accessed Toni's phone to locate a phone number. His father contacted Toni's aunt, contacted her on either the same evening or the next day, Tuesday, December 31st, and informed her of the findings. From there, the family arranged for retrieval of Tony's belongings. Initially, the family was not too concerned because Tony has a history of losing or misplacing her things. She led a busy life, so it may not have been too far gone to believe that this was any different. However, Sydney found that to be odd because it wasn't just a cell phone that was missing or a single item, but it was all of her items. Sydney went to Tony's home to take her items, but she found her to not be home. Sydney also found out that Tony was not at work that day. From there, she felt an odd feeling. She grew worried, and that's when she knew something was wrong. At this time, after not hearing from Tony, she missed work, and with the circumstances of the abandoned items, her family officially reported her missing. When the family went to the area on the bridge walkway where the other items were found, the ceramic vase and shoes that were placed next to the bag were gone. They also found that 1 or 2 days after the missing person flyers were posted on the bridge, Tony's wallet was located and seemingly conveniently placed under her missing person flyer. This was odd because it seemed intentional, as if someone wanted to send a message. Tony Turner was officially recorded as a missing person with the Pittsburgh PD. The search efforts. Tony's family, friends, and her community performed their own searches. Law enforcement did perform their own investigation, and what has been publicly shared, nothing really ever materialized from the investigation, which is why we're here now. I do know that on January 1st, 2020, Pittsburgh PD did release a missing persons alert for Tony. It's unclear if camera footage was checked or around the bridge or what other measures were taken to locate Tony. With the missing persons alert in place, a new tip led to the Hill District. The Hill District is described by locals as an unsavory part of town, mainly in part due to the high crime. It's not an area that Tony herself would frequent or would have any business with being there. It's not clear of the specifics exactly what the tip was. We can assume that there was a sighting, but nothing has been communicated publicly about all of what that tip entailed. Nothing ever materialized from it. The timeline. Before we go further into the analysis to break down the little case details that we do have, I want to first recap the timeline to ensure you're on board with what we know regarding her steps. I credit a portion of my timeline from Uncovered. So let's start with December 30th, 2019. Tony went to work, as usual, and completed her shift that ended at 4 p.m. Sometime after work, Tony boarded her bus to head home and stopped in Squirrel Hill. She went to Dober Tea, a local tea spot in Squirrel Hill area in Pittsburgh. She spoke on the phone with her sister, Sydney. From there, Tony boarded her bus for the second and final leg of her trip to head home to Hazelwood. Around 6:15 p.m., Tony offboarded the bus at the intersection of Hazelwood Avenue and Gidding Street, her usual stop. Sometime between 7:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., Tony's belongings were found on the walkway at the Homestead Grays Bridge. The next day, on December 31st, the father of the firefighter accessed Tony's apparently unlocked phone to locate a family member. He contacted Tony's aunt to inform her of his findings and to schedule retrieval of her belongings. At 11:45 a.m., the aunt meets with the father to retrieve the items. From there, the aunt contacts Sydney at some point to let her know about the items. Sydney then says she will take Tony her items, but when she arrived to her home, she was not there. At 8 p.m., after realizing the seriousness of this and without any word from Tony and her not showing up to work, her family officially reported her missing with the Pittsburgh PD. So now we're in January 1st, 2020. Pittsburgh PD released a missing person alert. Sometime in January, a new tip was developed that led them to the Hill District in Pittsburgh. The details of the tip was never made public, nor has anything ever publicly materialized from it. This is where we're left in mystery. The case breakdown. We have the important details, but like with every case, there are just some elements that don't have answers. The priorities for me are Where is Tony, and how did her personal belongings get from Hazelwood to the Homestead Great Bridge, and why? So let's analyze this further, from the top. A life transition. We learn from Tony's sister, Sydney, that Tony was experiencing bouts of depressive episodes, dealing with some past trauma, and really just trying to find her place in the world. She was working 40 plus hours a week, and it was draining her. Tony was an artist. Before I move forward, one thing. Like I say with every case, I speak in past tense because we don't know what became of our missing person, and we can only speak on what was prior to them going missing. With Tony being a creative and her having that much structure may have been overwhelming. This is not to say that she did not want to work, but she needed something different and maybe just did not know how to obtain it. We also have to remember that this was days before the new year. A lot of us do experience anxiety or a rush of emotions before the new year because of the possibilities and that we're leaving behind what we left in the previous year, figuratively. What we don't know is when Tony was experiencing these episodes and how close they were to when she went missing. Sydney did confirm that Tony was coming out of the sadness and was more optimistic about the future. If this element is true, it makes it hard to believe that Tony committed suicide. That's one of the believed theories due to her items being found on the bridge. This is something I want to delve into in a few. Another thing that stuck out to me is that Tony was going through a breakup with her boyfriend. Sydney mentions this in an interview. There has not been much focus on the boyfriend, and it could be because he's already been cleared. Which leads us to our next element. The boyfriend's alibi. Tony lived with her boyfriend and best friend. Both the boyfriend and best friend were out of town at the time she went missing. Now, I don't know if this has been confirmed, nor do I know where they both were out of town and for how long. We know at some point that Tony informed Sydney that they were going through a breakup. Sydney told Tony that she can live with her and her other roommates who were also friends of Sydney and knew Tony. This move was scheduled to take place on Wednesday, January 1st. Tony had something to look forward to. We don't know the specifics of the relationship, the reason for the breakup, or if this breakup was mutual. He was said to have been out of town, so that would clear him of personal and direct involvement. From work to home. Tony completed her shift, left work, and got on the bus. As I've mentioned, Tony would get on at Braddock, leave her job, Studebaker Metals, and head to Squirrel Hill, which is where Dover T is located, then catch her final bus ride home to walk home. I was able to pull up the map and visual of the route she would have took. When I saw the visuals, it was concerning, and I will explain why. On the evening of Monday, December 30th, 2019, around the time Tony would have offboarded her bus, it was 46 degrees Fahrenheit. Winds were 20 miles per hour, which is categorized as a fresh breeze, whereas tree leaves would move, but it was not a heavy wind. Just hours before, it was raining. The weather condition was cloudy, and by that time at 6:15 p.m., it was already dark, and may have even appeared darker because of the amount of trees in the area. To be even more specific, the sun has set exactly at 5:02 p.m. on this day. This walk from her bus stop would have taken around 4 or 5 minutes from the intersection to her home in the Owl Hollow community. Though this was a short walk, it was a dark walk, and not an area that is safe for a young woman to walk alone. Based off the fact that it was dark, there were few houses in the area and heavy tree terrain in the area, making it possible for someone to hide in. It's also not clear who else got off at this stop, or if it was just Tony. We have confirmation from the bus driver that Tony was on the bus that evening and did exit. As I've already stated, he was a neighbor of Tony, so we can assume that he was familiar with her for the fact that he was a neighbor and that this was a route she commonly took to get to and from work and home. Because she was on the bus and made it to her final stop, something had to happen either somewhere during her walk or once she entered into her home. Sydney did claim that when she went to drop off her sister's items before realizing something is wrong, she saw her red jacket there, and that is said to be the jacket she was wearing. This is something that I found to be conflicting because some reports state Tony was wearing a black jacket. I'm unsure how Sydney knew it was that particular jacket that she was wearing, or if she may have had another red jacket. Tony's team at work, the staff at Dover Tea, and the bus driver may have confirmed what she was wearing that day, but with the conflicting reports, I don't have assurance on that. The red jacket being at home, if that is the exact one she was wearing that day, can mean that she did in fact make it home, which creates another layer to this mystery. It could also mean that someone was in her home and harmed her once she arrived home. It also could mean the person harmed her on her way home and completely staged everything from the jacket to the purse and days later, the wallet, giving them access to her residence since the keys were found in her personal belongings. The question then leads to, if that was the case, who felt comfortable enough to enter into Tony's home not knowing if someone would be present, since we now know that she did live with other people and not alone? I want you to rest on this for a minute. The thing is, we just don't know, which leads me to my next topic of discussion, something very interesting that came across my mind while conducting my research. The staging. The items appeared staged. That's no secret. It's almost as if someone had her belongings or gained access to them and personally placed them in the area of the bridge to make it appear Tony committed suicide. Now, this is something that I have not seen anyone discuss. I wonder who else knew she was experiencing some depression. When you look at this element, it creates the perfect scenario, an easy write-off. She was dealing with her internal struggles, which is what we learned from Sydney. Who else would have known she was dealing with this? Not everyone who is sad wants to commit suicide, something so final. Tony may have been experiencing depression, but perhaps not suicidal. The easiest way to stage a disappearance of someone who dealt with mental health concerns, specifically depression or suicidal ideations, is by staging a suicide. The easiest and cleanest way to do it is a bridge because it's so vast. It's water. It's not that easy to find a body or any remains there. Do I believe Tony is somewhere in the water under the Homestead Great Bridge? No. Do I have any factual evidence to prove that? No. This is just me analyzing this case from my standpoint based on the public facts and family accounts. This person took time to create an assumed scenario. Again, if it even happened that way. This person or persons took time and transported her belongings to a bridge during a time when there would be cars on the bridge. Risk being seen, offloaded her items, and within minutes to hours they were found. Then, they returned days later with her wallet. I want to make it clear, this is if this even occurred. Who would go through this? This sounds personal. Whether the person knew her or knew of her, you know, been watching her. The items being in the position they were appear that they were strategically placed there. I would think that if this was a random crime of opportunity, then the person involved would not go through this whole game of leaving breadcrumbs on the bridge. Check the footage. This is something that I've wrestled with because we know there are cameras everywhere, especially in 2019. Not just traffic cameras, but actual street cameras and cameras that are on businesses in the vicinity. We don't know if the person dropped this off on foot or in a car. I can't get a clear answer on if the bridge did have surveillance or not. This would be a good starting point, but I don't know if it was ever explored or if Pittsburgh PD does have footage. Suicide. I've said it already, and I will say it again. I don't believe Tony committed suicide. Of course, this is something I have no proof of, but if she did, would she have went all the way near her home just to walk back, catch a ride or a bus to Homestead just to end her life on the bridge? All while removing her shoes and no one saw her do this? If she committed suicide by jumping off a bridge, would she have needed to remove her shoes? It was cold, dark, and I just don't see this happening. We don't know what goes through people's minds because we all have different feelings, traumas, experiences, and outlook. Based on Sydney's communication, it seems less likely this occurred. I know law enforcement looked at her diary and some of the entries may have pointed to her being sad. But again, this does not mean this young woman ended her own life. She had something to look forward to. A life transition to moving with her sister Sydney and start anew. There's really nothing else to say there. This is why I wonder who else knew she was experiencing depressive episodes at one point. The correlation between the bridge, going missing, and an alleged suicide is aligned too perfectly. Especially when it could have been much easier to throw her items in the woods that were near her home instead of placing them on the walkway of the bridge where multiple cars would be passing through to risk being seen or remembered by a passerby. The firefighter. I've read conflicting information where some articles say that the firefighter was the one riding the bike across the bridge, then some saying it was a young man whose father was a firefighter. The cyclist who was on the bridge that found Tony's belongings is an interesting mention. There could be nothing to it at all. My first question is, would you pick up a bag that was left abandoned? What we don't know is what this person felt in that moment that prompted him to pick it up. He could have felt an eerie feeling where he may have thought someone jumped since the shoes were there in a ceramic vase. The cyclist mentioned that he could not carry the shoes in the ceramic vase since he was on a bike. Understandable. The shoes and ceramic vase were gone when they went back. I don't know if this was family, law enforcement, or the cyclist and his father that found the shoes and vase gone. The shoes could have been picked up by someone homeless, kicked into the water under the bridge, or if someone is involved, they could have went back and picked them up. I've seen comments saying that they believe the cyclist knows more. I have to say that it is typical for law enforcement to bring a person in for questioning that found evidence pertaining to a missing person, assuming they are not persons of interest or have been cleared. Whether they know more or not, nothing public suggests that. I would like to know what that person was thinking in that moment. My opinion. When I initially read about Tony, the light she brought with her, always smiling and her love for the arts, I knew she was special. We all go through things, and a lot of us smile through it. But I do wonder, what was going through her mind once she stepped off that bus to start her walk home? Tony was doing everything that she was supposed to do. She was going to work, giving back to her community, and just simply on her way home to prepare for the new year, her new move with her sister, and prepare literally for the next day. One thing that stands out to me is that there is no mention of the condition of the ceramic vase that was near her abandoned purse. We don't know the size of the vase, the color, or how it looked. I wonder, was the vase cracked or broken in any way? This would signify that she was caught off guard and there was something or some sort of attack or something that startled her. It's just another detail that we don't know, but something I thought I would mention. Even the red jacket. Did she make it home or did this person have access to her home? I question this because whoever is involved seemingly played a little game with leaving breadcrumbs, staging the scene at the bridge. Then, days later, her wallet is found under the missing person's flyer. It just seems too perfectly aligned. If this was staged, I would not be surprised. This just doesn't seem like happenstance. Why the bridge and not her items tossed in the woods where you would have a better chance of not being seen? Sadly, this case is lacking the pertinent details because we have more questions than answers. I don't know if it was a lack of urgency from Pittsburgh PD at the start of the case, or there's just no paper trail to retrace her steps. There has to be something. Her phone had to have pinged somewhere, and there are street cameras that would have picked her up. I also wonder about the search efforts. Cadaver dogs could have been brought in to conduct a more elaborate search to see if her scent was picked up at some point. I cannot confirm if this was done. I can't imagine Tony getting off the bus and walking a little over an hour to the bridge, remove her belongings, and just jump to end her life. Sure, it can happen, because I did not know her personally. I don't know what was going through her head. Even if that did happen, she still deserves to be found because until then, we won't know. Tony was so close to home when she exited the bus at her usual stop. If this was a suicide mission, could there have not been another way to go through with it than to get so close to home, then decide to leave and go the opposite way? If she caught a ride to the bridge, then why hasn't that person come forward? I don't believe Tony took her life on the evening of Monday, December 30th, 2019. I believe something happened close to home. You have to remember that it was winter in Pittsburgh. It was after 6 p.m. It was dark. We don't know what was lurking in that vicinity on that evening. Tony seemed to have had a routine schedule. This is something that isn't hard to catch on to, making a person susceptible to harm because their moves are predictable. Crime with a perfect opportunity or targeted. Due to the lack of details, we can't pinpoint this. I've seen commenters and sleuths even consider the boyfriend. It's not talked about much in media that they were in the process of breaking up. We don't know the details there, and we don't know the relationship dynamic. As I've already stated, he was said to be out of town, along with the best friend also being out of town. I cannot confirm if this was verified in interrogation regarding both parties, but there is nothing, as of today, to suggest that the boyfriend or best friend are persons of interest, and I will stick with that. The worst thing you can do is incriminate someone who has no reason to be. Then, we can't forget the tip that led searchers to the Hill District. The Hill District is a little over a 10-minute drive from her home in Hazelwood, and over an hour in walking distance. The details of the tip are unfound. We don't know much about it. Some have alluded to this being a trafficking situation because of the location that she was at where the tip led them to the Hill District. I have not found anything public to suggest that. This does not mean it's not a possibility. Trafficking is one of those things where it's massive, and there are many ways to do it. It comes in different forms and different approaches. Based on Tony and her characteristics, I don't see anyone selling her that package. But Tony was also a warm spirit, and this can sadly be a gateway to allow certain individuals in that don't mean well. You have her diary entry, alluding to her being sad. The staff at Dover Tea saw her. You have the bus driver who confirmed seeing her. Her sister Sydney that said she was dealing with some things. And again, this does not mean this young lady took her life, but she was dealing with the growing pains of life and simply being a young adult, a young creative. This is a case I want solved, just like all of my cases. I know Tony's family and her community misses her. This is a great loss, and I believe the answers lie somewhere in Hazelwood. I don't believe she was on the bridge. I wonder who knew about Tony before she knew about them. I want you to formulate your own opinion and do your own research. Tony was a fine individual. She deserves answers, and her family are awaiting her return home. Just another best-kept secret of what happened back in December 2019. With a case like this that's freezing cold, I sadly don't have the answers, but I know someone does. Until people start talking, we don't have anything. It's been almost 5 years cold, and I would hate for this family to go another year without knowing. There's a possibility that Tony's disappearance could have been staged as a suicide. At the time of Tony's disappearance, she was 22 years old, stood at 5'2 and weighed 130 pounds. Tony is of mixed race, but presents as African American, has brown eyes and curly black chin-length hair that is sometimes wrapped in a scarf. Tony has a light brown complexion with a spiral tattoo on her left shoulder and a pierced labret, a piercing that is under the lip. Tony will be 27 today on June 10, 2024. Tony was last seen wearing a black zip-up or red jacket, a gray t-shirt with writing in orange letters, and grayish cargo pants. If you have any information or leads in the disappearance of Tony Turner, her current whereabouts, or any information concerning Tony, it should be directed to the Pittsburgh Police Department at 412-323-7141. A mural was installed to remember Tony Turner. The mural was designed by Morris Nixon Washington and Sandy Kaminsky. This mural is in Braddock on Braddock Avenue across from Bell's Market. I thank you for your viewership of Tony's case. I know someone holds the answers. As always, I ask that you be respectful in the comments and think critically before you comment negatively. Remember, this can happen to any of us, and I'm only doing what I would want done for me. and as you may want done for you. Take care of yourself. Be safe, be vigilant, and always be aware of your surroundings. God bless you. For this reason, I tell you, when you pray and ask for something, believe that you have received it, and you will be given whatever you ask for. Mark 11:24.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.